The thing that frustrated me a lot before going into venture was seeing that data and AI leaders were not in the boardrooms. They were not in the C-suite.
How valuable of an asset is data as you assess a business?
Every single thing that you have that is part of a business is codified through data. Think of it as your website for the next era of the internet.
How does a business with an effective AI data strategy improve its valuation?
One, I think your data strategy has to be extremely...
The data is always growing, and it's an invaluable asset, but you have to manage it, use it, and scale it correctly to really harness its power. Madison Faulkner is at the cutting edge of data and venture capital, serving as partner at NEA, a VC firm that is breaking boundaries across the board. We're so lucky to have her here today to talk us about how data in the agentic AI era become a secret weapon. Welcome, Madison.
Thank you so much for having me.
So talk to us about your story. How did you end up in AI and data, and where does Rodeo play into all of this?
Yes. So I grew up in Colorado, and rodeo was a pretty big part of my life growing up. Performed in rodeos all over the U.S., including very, very small towns that you've never heard of. But at the same time, I was also working very hard at school, doing lots of, very engineering-focused educational work, and finally ended up at Stanford, where I thought that I would be going after a banking role. And as soon as I got to Stanford, realized that there was so much more compelling work to be done in the data and engineering side. So I ended up really moving towards that world over time, and ended up turning down my full-time offer to go into investment banking at Merrill Lynch, and decided I was going to jump into what was research at Meta at the time. There was no such thing as data science at that era. And I remember a couple of months in, they were like, we're going to make this into this new role called data science. And everyone was like, what is that? Is it Excel? Is it programming? No one really knows. But quickly through my time at Meta, I transitioned from analytics to closer to AI infrastructure, and very quickly over to the deep learning side, which was very lucky for me because I did not have a PhD. I was very much kind of soaking up everyone else's expertise. And spent a lot of my time doing moonshot projects on deep learning infrastructure, working very closely with the FAIR team, which is the Facebook AI research team, and eventually ended up moving out to New York to sit closer with the FAIR team and do research out there. Over some time, loved my time at Meta. I ended up really just feeling this inclination to want to go build AI in the real world. You know, I think my rodeo roots were pulling me back towards what does AI and data look like in a real industry ecosystem.
How does rodeo play into this?
You know, I think there's such a bifurcation between Silicon Valley world and the real world that is using AI for manufacturing or for supply chain, or, you know, I used to work with my dad on industrial marketing in Colorado, and there was no AI story in that at that point. But I think there's so much more opportunity as you think about crossing the chasm between the two. And so I think having that public school rodeo lens to the world really helped me to, and continues to help me in my venture career of being close to both.
That makes sense to me, actually. Like, really, it does, because I feel like being so into like the theoretical and just working with like, let's see what it can do rather than seeing real world applications.
One, and Silicon Valley continues, I think, to be driven by a lot of hype, a lot of marketing, a lot of interesting ideas for what can be done. But there's very little relationship with some of these older markets where there are huge, huge industries that are desperately in need of automation. But it requires, you know, speaking to the level of understanding of people who haven't consistently worked with AI and hype and marketing. So I really try to lean into both personalities.
I had to go to San Francisco 2 weeks ago, and driving from the airport to the hotel, it was the first time I've ever seen, we're talking about like dozens of billboards about AI products that are about to come out and all this hype. So it's wild. It's wild to just even see that.
Yeah, the billboards get a little painful, especially as you're, you know, you want to take a Saturday off and you're like, good God, there's so many. They're just everywhere. But no, it's really cool. It surrounds you, and it's just this culture of excitement and energy. So yeah, it's fun to kind of have both sides of my personality. And I think that was really what was calling me outside of Meta. And so I ended up going to lead data science and AI for a venture capital firm named Graycroft. And that was a wild project because I did have to basically entirely build a new data platform from scratch and work to do a lot of digital transformation for the firm in a very regulated industry. So it's very night and day experience from Meta. Following that, I ended up going to lead a data science and AI organization at a startup called Thrasio, which is an e-commerce aggregator. Similarly, building from scratch with a team of 20, and a pretty wild experience to basically start with, you know, some linear regressions and get to a point of full dynamic systems for pricing and demand forecasting.
It has to feel so good though, from like nothing to finally seeing where it ends up. And you did that twice?
Yeah, it was a lot of work and I think many sleepless nights. But it was really, really fun to take two entirely new problems and just think through how do we both attack this from the top down and the bottoms up and build the best systems, bring in the right people who need to build this, decide when to build and when to buy. And both in both scenarios, we got full systems deployed and were able to show pretty large incremental EBITDA improvements. And that is a high I continue to chase in venture and work really closely with my companies to try to achieve the same thing at scale.
Let's frame the big problem for data leaders today. We have all these unbelievable tools, agentic AI, obviously, but the data seems to be growing at the same rate or even faster. So what are the biggest problems and what are the biggest opportunities right now?
It's really interesting because obviously, as you know, the framing of this episode, data is the entire breaking point of AI today. It is truly the unlock for all value creation with agentic AI. And it is really still not getting its moment of innovation. I continue to wait and watch and think through and work closely with lots of data leaders to innovate in this space. But I don't think the market has quite run after data as the unlock at this point. So one problem that I think is clear is still just this lack of understanding that data is the piece of the puzzle that's missing for many enterprises and also just for smaller startups who are up and running. But tactically, I think the bigger challenges tend to be siloed and decentralized data. And the challenge being there's often way too much of it. Companies will fall back on the sword of, wow, we have lots of different siloed data. And the answer that they will run to is just buy more data. But you really need more aggregation and you need more thoughtful curation of your data. And then I think the other side to that coin tends to be there is significant unstructured data that ends up accumulating. And the baseline that I see everyone defaulting to today is just leveraging their unstructured data with AI. But I think the key is really building it into a more structured semantic layer. In my opinion, that tends to be best done with knowledge graphs or at least some sort of semantic graphical model. But in the modern data stack, that really wasn't the default. And I think now we're in this very difficult headache of lots of 2D data models, lots of unstructured data, and no translation between the two.
So you're talking about curating data after the fact. Do you anticipate that we're going to start or that enterprise is going to start while they're capturing the data, start curating at that point to make it easier for them to then use it within their agentic workflows, whatever they're using?
Yeah, I think that's the ideal scenario, right? Ideally, most companies today have a DBT, they have a data model. I think that needs to be the home of your structured data. Whether or not it's DBT, I think that might possibly end up being replaced over time. But that needs to be tied to your unstructured data so that you're able to contextualize it and really use that with your agentic applications. Otherwise, it's fairly useless and, you know, you're going to get a lot of hallucinations and poor POCs.
Let's say you're doing RAG against a PDF, it's unstructured. You're saying having a semantic layer or structuring that data after the fact would make it more or less likely to hallucinate?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not even to say that you specifically need to structure that PDF, but you need to contextualize it against structured data that is already curated at a minimum.
How do you do that?
So my ideal recommendation for everyone would be go set up a knowledge graph that is truly underlying your business. You should have products tied to your users, all of those entities being connected in a more real-world fashion. And over time, I think that ends up looking like product embeddings that are maintained by a company. Just to define, An embedding, in case anyone's not aware, an embedding is a multidimensional representation of data, and it allows you to capture lots of different characteristics about your products, about your users, and place them in a similar data point on a, you know, dimensional, multidimensional graph. By capturing this information, you're able to make use of your data on a multidimensional level versus just, you know, simple data tables.
So what would the prep look like? Can you walk us through a little bit of the process when you're wrangling this raw data and prepping it for these AI use cases?
Yeah, so I'll give you an example, maybe going back to my Facebook days. So most people don't realize that the Facebook ad auction really is a collection of embeddings. So what we do is we capture you as a user, your information and your preferences, the things that you tend to interact with, the signals or products that you tend to have high intent on. So maybe I'm really excited about buying shoes these days, but 3 months ago I was looking at TVs. And all of that is captured in these short and long-term embeddings, which basically are a bunch of numerical representations of your preferences. And then on the other side, we do the same thing with products. So we'll capture all the characteristics of products and the types of users that engage with them. What we do then, as you log on to your phone on the ad auction, we'll run an auction to just identify all the products that both capture your user and product preferences. So in summary, taking a step back, you really need to curate simple data about your users and your products. You need to identify even simple retrieval mechanisms of being able to understand their preferences, and then capture that through a retrieval system, like a search or a recommendation system. And that allows you to maintain this layer of understanding about your users and your products over time that then ingests dynamically this new information about company, about a product or a user.
Can you tell me a little bit of the challenges you see between structured and unstructured data?
Yeah. So unstructured data, obviously, lots of raw information. You know, much of it can be numerical. I think these days a lot of it is in text, image, video. And a lot of our systems to manage unstructured data tend to be focused on one modality. So you might have audio-specific processing. You might have video-specific infrastructure. I haven't seen infrastructure that really works across modalities. So I think our unstructured data today really suffers from this, and it continues to create more of this like siloed data problem. So then the other component to unstructured data that is challenging is, again, translating that back to a structured or semantic understanding of what it is. So as we look at, let's say, a lot of information from your CDP as an e-commerce solution, we're just getting lots of different understanding of this user clicked on this product or this button. How do we actually contextualize that back to different types of users, different types of products, and make use of it? So you end up with way too much information and very little meaningful insight to pull from it.
We dove headfirst into this conversation, but let's back up a little bit. All of this data work is made, and I'm assuming this, is made easier and more effective thanks to modern AI. And so, has AI affected your current work, and has it changed dramatically since like agentic AI, all this stuff came out?
Yeah, I would say it's night and day for me. And obviously, you know, part of my job is being someone who tries and uses lots of products and who is optimistic about the future of these products. But it's, you know, very important to me as a former operator and engineer to be walking the walk, not just saying how valuable all this stuff is. So I actually run our internal data and AI initiatives here as a side project. So we are also internally building lots of different knowledge graphs, which enable us to then identify companies that might be raising, very early new companies. We look across lots of different channels and we build agentic sourcing leads for ourselves. So that's one example of us using all of this to replace a lot of what was very manual processes in a very unstructured environment by assigning structure to it through, you know, an automation process that basically kind of takes the manual work of an analyst and replaces it with agentic sourcing.
All right, without getting into details, you don't have to tell me anything specific, but you said you're optimistic about the people you invest in. Are there any like moments or anything that you see within a conversation about a new company that you're like, okay, wait, this is a company I want to invest in? Like high level, like what are you looking for?
It really changes per stage and per category of company. And I think that's actually something you learn through the cycles of venture. And I'm still newer. I'm only 3 years in now, but seeing different categories and the types of founders that come out, their types, their problems, and the approach that they take. I think what's really critical for me is, one, I really look for founder market fit. I want to see the expert of that field building the next generation of that problem and having a very strong opinion about where the world needs to go to the point where they're going to bend over backwards to make it happen. So that hunger, that drive, but also that unique insight, I think is really critical. The other thing from a more technical lens that I think is maybe a little more unique to my process specifically, I work with heads of data, heads of engineering, heads of AI. I meet with them every week from enterprises, from startups, from regulated banks, healthcare, you know, organizations. And I really try to understand what is the specific pain points that they're feeling today. What tools are they needing in their workflow? And I generally don't invest in a company unless I've already made multiple customer introductions that have gone through. I see this unique opportunity I have to almost be a spokesperson for my buyer profile, because I was very disappointed in the state of infrastructure and data and AI when I was trying to build. And I think it's because we didn't have enough people who really deeply understood that pain point and the problems and invested mostly on shallow solutions.
Let's talk a little bit about these pain points. What are the biggest problems with AI and data in today's business environment?
Today, I think there is a couple different tactical problems, and there's also a lot of organizational problems. So tactically, I think you really end up with unstructured data not being close to your structured data. That's a huge challenge. I know we've talked about it a lot, but companies need to figure out how to build this dynamic loop between unstructured information and APIs that are coming in to their structured data. And that's going to be what closes the loop with agentic data processing being able to work more autonomously. I think another key tactical error that we see a lot of are limited focus on ROI generation and measurement of your value. And I think that results in poor scoping. Most companies today, and this was very true 5 to 10 years ago when data leaders were trying to create value, there was just such a mismatch in expectations of the C-suite versus the data leaders. And it consistently led to lots of churn of data leaders, data companies. So I think there has to be a lot more focus on scoping. Now, getting into a little bit more technical focus, I think we are not very well set up for agentic data processing and optimization. So thinking about systems that are natively accessible to agents have a lot more of that rigorous security and governance protocol, even, you know, are native to the tool calling and MCP layers. Those are all big challenges that don't exist. Most of our data processing and data pipelines today are still built by hand, manually, by data engineers who are running these SQL queries over and over and over again. And I actually think that there's big opportunities to replace a lot of that existing data stack to be a lot more inference native in the future.
So it sounds like the problem remains with access, with governance, with management and securing data. As you advise founders, what is your advice as they scale their data workflows?
So scaling is probably the key challenge today that I'm very worried about where we are set up, where we're headed. We all saw the vector database wave a couple of years ago. And in my opinion, vector databases were a symptom of this problem. They're a short-term solution for what needs to be enabled for retrieval in AI, but they don't do well with scaling most of the time. That's where you see a lot of people shifting towards Elastic and Postgres today. TurboPuffer, I think, is a perfect example of a retrieval solution that is much more scalable and why it's taking off so much. So retrieval and scale has to be front of mind early on. And I think it also has to be multimodal focused early on. We saw this a lot at Facebook as we used a solution called Face, F-A-I-S-S, which is very, you know, I would liken it a little bit more closely to Postgres and some of these more high scalability retrieval solutions. That's going to be critical in the medium to late term. So if you build everything in vector DBs, your data continues to be siloed from your existing database and nothing can be inference or low latency first. The other major component to this is we have never built data the same way that we have built software, right? In terms of being programmable, I want to see data workloads be built like code, where they're granular, they're very optimized down to the lowest level. They have all of that modularization and parameterization around access control so that systems can go and use data and process data, such as agents, over time. And we don't have any of that today. So I think solutions like a Bow Plan or Pixel Table or LanceDB, which are very new early startups, are starting to attack this problem and build data as code.
Can you give me an example of how you've seen a startup grow?
You mean grow in their data volume?
Yeah, like with this data volume, with this way of looking at data the way you are.
I mean, some of the best ones to think about are companies like Runway ML or Cursor, which have grown really quickly, and they've had to quickly capture lots of data and build very effective data strategies. So Cursor, for example, has had to go out and think about their data acquisition flywheel. And I'm saying Cursor, you know, it's similar to OpenAI, Anthropic. They've all had to do very similar things. They have to go think about a really creative data acquisition channel to go build their training data sets and capture data about lots of different industries. They've also had to structure their go-to-market in that way. They've had to think very early on about building highly scalable data retrieval processes, which often does mean moving more towards a Postgres, an Elastic, or a TurboPuffer style of approach. They've had to build very curated underlying semantic layers, and then, like I was mentioning, build that back to those unstructured retrieval processes. And then at the same time, they've also had to build out pretty sophisticated analytics and data science teams who are able to work on capturing insights, product metrics, and building that into the overall IP of a company. Ultimately, every company in big tech world ends up being run by mechanism design, which really is just metrics that are baking in all of those incentives for the product to be run the right way. These companies are, you know, full-scale, verticalized data machines.
Can you talk a little bit about mechanism design?
There's very few people who have worked in what I would call as the mechanism design heart of each big tech company. A lot of them were formerly economists. These economists come in, they bring a lot of that formal theory of metrics and organizational understanding, and they bake it into real practical metrics that can be measured against. And they're just critical to be able to run a company the way that is incentively aligned with what you're actually trying to goal towards. So for example, you know, maybe most companies that are more medium scale, they're going to think about measuring revenue. Revenue is only one small piece of the picture. You're often thinking about a couple goal metrics of your company that you think really measure what you're trying to win in the long term. So I think the big unlock for Facebook was when they switched from just trying to target more engagement, and when they step back and realize we're really trying to optimize for long-term engagement with the company, not just short-term clicks. And they were able to bake that into the ad auction measurement. That was a huge unlock, and it really drove much higher quality content and kept people coming back to both Facebook and Instagram. So most companies that get to a certain scale, like an OpenAI or Anthropic at this point, are starting to build in mechanism design to their overall model measurement.
Do you have to be an economist to understand mechanism design, or can I look at a YouTube video and be like, ah?
I would say this is PhD level expertise, okay, to be honest. The beauty is, though, PhDs who do it really well, they build a mechanism design that is fully understandable by the company. And that's why it's such an unlock, because you're really able to understand how a formula breaks down and which part of the formula of the company you are affecting. And if you can boil your whole company into one formula, even if it's super large, it takes gigabytes to print, it is such a crazy unlock for efficiency because everyone's going towards the same thing.
All right, so let's look at this from the other way a little bit. Let's say I'm an entrepreneur. What can I do right now, today, to harness data and AI and like build up a competitive advantage?
You just need to be trying lots of new things. Don't default to, you know, the baseline that was what you used 5 to 10 years ago. Think about going to open source, trying new projects, getting out there to events and learning. That's probably the key initiative or the key advice that I would recommend today is just being a learner and trying versus sticking to the old baseline. And that's going to set you up in a really strong way compared to other companies that just aren't making that initiative.
Today, right now, honestly, is the best time for anyone who's curious. I mean, just the way it's situated, you could learn practically anything. Maybe not a PhD, but you could learn practically anything and apply it.
Absolutely. And it's really unbelievable because you can see with so many people who have that scar tissue of, well, this wasn't possible before. We've tried that. It didn't work. There's so much that we should be throwing away in terms of those expectations, that scar tissue of what didn't work in the past that can work today. And you can see it in a lot of these hungry young new grad founders that they're building things no one else has been able to build in the past, and they're doing it successfully in some scenarios, of course. Throwing away our priors is probably the key advice that I have in terms of building really industry-leading data processes.
Have you seen anything surprising or counterintuitive emerge from your work in data in VC?
I mean, studying the data ecosystem, I think something that I didn't realize as much. One, coming into venture, I've always been very enterprise focused. And I think data as a field is very enterprise focused compared to other industries. But I maybe undervalued the consumer and prosumer initiatives and go-to-market efforts in this this latest industry wave. I think everyone has to have this really strong, deep focus on how you go to market, how you reach developers, how you build a marketing flywheel that just continues to deliver very simply what you're trying to build. And I think you can't exist purely as an enterprise player anymore, even in the data ecosystem, which I was probably too conservative in thinking. So I really push my companies these days to think about developer-first solutions, prosumer initiatives. But it is also very important to note, I think some people go too far in the opposite direction, you know, and build products for consumers and data that just doesn't exist. You simply cannot build a large company that is consumer first for the data ecosystem because data exists in the context of an enterprise.
So listen, like a couple of years ago, generative AI, that's what everyone was talking about. Oh my God, you could talk to this chatbot. It could actually respond back to you in just natural language. So now it's agentic AI. And for me, as an architect and who has deep into this, it was a revelation. Right. We could call tools, we could use MCP, we could do all this stuff. Oh my God, we could do all this. What's next? What do you think is next? It seems like you have your finger on the pulse more than I do, at least. What is next?
There's a couple steps coming, right? I think we just touched on one of them, which is I think where we go from agents is we go to more autonomy. That's probably the smaller step we're working towards in the future. And the challenge with that becomes, what is fully autonomous agents and what is more collaborative human in the loop style agents? What does that medium look like? And so as you hear where I'm headed with this, I think the medium is likely the next big wave that we're headed towards. So that becomes physical AI, robotics, devices. How are we going to interact with these new systems? I could actually see a whole new wave in, say, 3 to 5 years of consumer hardware, even enterprise hardware, be built because AI is so much more efficient and some of the underlying hardware as well. Just such a different state of the ecosystem than it once was. So I can see a lot of that getting rebuilt. But I think the big opportunity I'm looking for maybe right now isn't even specifically robotics, even though that's the wave I think we're moving towards, but it's more about on-device, being able to bridge between on-device and on-edge with cloud. So how do you think about managing your AI systems that may be fairly hybrid or may need to default to one or the other at various moments?
What should enterprise-level data leaders like CDOs do right now? What should they say, okay, let's stop listening to David and Madison. We got to go do this literally right now.
really advocate for your team, your leadership, the resources that you need. My biggest goal and the thing that frustrated me a lot before going into venture was seeing that data and AI leaders were not in the boardrooms. They were not in the C-suite. I want to see more leaders advocating for themselves to have budget level ownership, be responsible for these decisions at a C-suite level, because truly you need this technical expertise to be running a business in today's era. So that would be my recommendation is, you know, go ask for what you need to be a leader.
As like a data leader, how do you advocate for yourself at like a C-level to like the C-suite? What do you say?
The key is you need to be willing to take responsibility for your results. When you sit in a corner and you just build incremental data dashboards that don't touch the bottom line, you're missing out. So you need to be framing a solution that is end-to-end, including measurement, ROI. You need to bring it to the C-suite and say, listen, we're going to deliver this with X percent certainty, and this is the timeline that I expect it to take. Here are the risks that I think are also important to recognize, and here are the resources that I need. And you need to track your progress towards those to the C-suite. But I think the key is also recognizing the problems and the pain points that they're feeling and baking that into your own roadmap. I've come into many companies where the data and engineering team are so separate from the C-suite and the business side of the world. And I think we need to see the technical leaders take responsibility for their impact that they're delivering. And the best ones are doing that. They're amazing at what they do. And that's why, you know, it's such an expensive hire when you really can find someone who can build for impact.
All right. So you're a little biased, obviously. You're a partner at a VC, but how valuable of an asset is data as you assess a business?
So my strong opinion is that data is a business. Your entire business today, if you were to look back over the last couple decades, has been manual, people forward. Every single thing has been paper forms. Data is the next era of a business where you're able to codify everything that you understand about your customers, your business, your monetization, all of your financials. Every single thing that you have that is part of a business is codified through data. The faster you move towards that, the more value you're able to accrue from your data. And in my opinion, the gold standard of where we're all working towards is being able to connect that unstructured data to your reinforcement learning feedback loop with your AI. If you're able to do this, you are truly able to connect your every single data point that's coming into your business to creating improvement in the user experience, in the value accrual, in, you know, the pricing, in all of the product decision making. So yeah, going back to it, data is your business. Think of it as your, you know, website for the next era of the internet.
How does a business with an effective AI data strategy improve its valuation?
One, I think your data strategy has to be extremely thoughtful to your business category, your product, and just your long-term vision, right? We have seen a number of companies, for example, who are, say, in the e-commerce space or the recruiting space, go and start to sell training data to other companies. And obviously, they're doing this all legally. They're, you know, being very thoughtful about how they can make use of the data. But the new era is monetizing your data, both from an external, but also in an internal manner. So what I really like to understand when I chat with companies through DD, due diligence, just to add clarity there, is think through every aspect of growth of their business. How do we see this becoming a massive company? And how do we back into that with our data asset and acquisition strategy? There's likely going to be, it's multi-pronged. It's going to be curating and building new data sets. It's going to be possibly selling data. It's going to be really building in that mechanism design to your company so that you're able to measure and consistently improve against your goals. There's so many aspects to it. And I think it's actually more of an art than a science, to be honest.
Hearing you speak, Madison, honestly, was really, really amazing. This has been a great conversation for me. Thank you so much for being here. And to those of you listening, thank you so much. Please subscribe across channels and we'll see you soon.